Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Ruth Fernandez. Extend a family. So tell me a little bit about Extend a Family.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me today.
Of course.
Extend a Family is an organization that supports children and youth with developmental disabilities up to the age of 21 years. Our focus or our mission is to explore inclusive opportunities for our young people so that they can participate in regular, everyday community. And the core of our work is about building friendships and relationships for people with disabilities.
So, do you work in partnership with any other organizations in this?
We work independently, but we do partner with other like-minded organizations whenever there is an opportunity. Can I share a little bit about the history of Extend a Family?
Sure.
So we started about 44 years ago, and it was started in Toronto by a group of parents who recognized that their children with developmental disabilities, unlike their typical children, had difficulty navigating friendships with peers. So they recognized that it would be beneficial for someone to explore friendships on behalf of their child and be a sort of connector for their child with the disability. And that is really how Extend a Family was born. So today our staff and our coordinators continue the work of being connectors or askers on behalf of families.
So how do you go about recruiting the askers to reach out on behalf of those with disabilities?
So our coordinators work in different ways. Always looking at the opportunity to build community for the child with a disability. One of the things that they do is they explore host possibilities. So what is a host? A host or a buddy or a friend is someone that wants to volunteer their time and be a friend with a child with a disability. So they may post, you know, a profile of a child or youth, always describing the person with a disability in focusing on their strengths and their giftedness, looking at things that the person can do or the interests that the person shares.
So,
and these profiles are posted in spaces and places that are in the heart of community, such as community centers, in the family's neighborhood, libraries, the faith community, high schools, and so on. And we also post invitations for hosts or buddies or friends on our Volunteer Toronto site, as well as our Extend a Family website.
So
the idea, sorry, go ahead.
Quite all right. I was just going to ask, what are some of the specific activities that a buddy paired up with person with a disability might engage in?
So typically they're looking at, you know, what is the interest of the person? So if someone has an interest in skating or in music, in whatever it is, in hockey, you know, we're trying to match people with sort of similar interests, but also the host tries to discover who the child or the youth is with a disability, who the person is, and vice versa. And as they get to know each other, they sort of, you know, explore sometimes beyond their community. They may, you know, go to a show together. They may go to the AGO together. They may do things really essentially what any two friends do together is what a host and the young person with a disability aim to do. Get to know each other and be engaged and part of their neighborhood or community. Now, during COVID, some of this has changed, as you can imagine. So our host introductions and meetings have happened online. Some people have continued to meet on over Zoom or other online platforms, but some connections have taken it a little bit further. You know, it's an individual decision, and some people have met in person. We also do, Extended Family also works in schools in the city of Toronto. We collaborate with both the school boards, the Toronto District School Board, the Toronto Catholic District School Board, in bringing the value of inclusion to the school community. So within schools, our coordinators support families in seeing how their child can be part of the mainstream classroom experience, and also offer support to parents in school meetings. And, you know, the value of inclusion, which is the mission and the focus of our work, we believe is beneficial for all, the child with a disability as well as the other children in the classroom, as they get to know the child and, you know, get to know more about the person's abilities and gifts and interests.
So, in your time with Extended Family, is there any success story that stands out for you?
I think there are many little success stories. So as people connect with each other and get to know each other, you know, it's the little successes that happen along the way. I think the greatest success has come, you know, when people in positions of leadership, you know, like a teacher or a youth leader at a community center, a business owner, someone out there is willing to look at ways in which a person with a disability is able to assume a meaningful role like their peers and enjoy being part of community like everyone. So for example, you know, over the summer we have, this is pre-COVID, we've hired summer students, which are university students, to support our children in inclusive camps and youth in community. So success stories happen when, you know, if, for example, there's a youth that wants to volunteer at a garden center, for example, in the summer, or be involved in his neighborhood or community in some way, and the person in a position of leadership, a youth leader or whoever it is, the employer, is willing to make accommodations that allow that person to take on a role, a meaningful role in that capacity. You know, another example might be somebody that wants to join a choir, for example, but may not sing. But the choir leader looks at the role that this young person can perform in the choir, and, you know, if the person has a good sense of drumming or a good beat in them, then they may create a role where this person becomes the drummer in the choir. So really what I'm trying to say, I guess, is the success stories are things that happen sort of along the way, and it comes from educating people around us to look at people with disabilities and look at what valued roles they can contribute in.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Cool. course. Okay.
Yeah, well, and just in closing with this interview, I just want to share that I wish families the courage to trust their decisions about inclusive choices for their loved ones.
Thank you very much. In this segment of our show, Zane Jaffrey will be telling us a little bit about his experience with adapted soccer. So tell me a little bit about your experience with All Abilities Soccer.
Yeah, for sure. So basically we do a number of things, but mainly our programs focus on delivering soccer-themed athletic programs for our athletes. So what we try to do is we basically try to build up the most inclusive environment possible for our athletes, and we really try to tailor the experience based on their own abilities, so as much as they can handle. This is very, you know, for myself, from being a coach to a volunteer, what it really comes down to is working with our athletes one-on-one and being able to set up the drills and the exercises in such a way that our athletes are able to handle them. So yeah, this can include, you know, some examples would include giving one-on-one instruction towards athletes. You know, some athletes might have trouble jumping, so we'll be focusing on trying to change the drills so they're able to handle that sort of thing. Or if perhaps they're having trouble understanding verbal instructions from a coach, we try to really, really try to make things easy to understand for our athletes. So if I could summarize my experience with our programs, it basically comes down to tailoring athletic programs to children with disabilities in such a way that they can handle it with their respective disabilities.
So what types of conditions do you most commonly see in your work?
We see a very wide variety of different conditions. There is no real, there is no specified, I guess you could say, requirements. We see a wide range of physical disabilities. We see intellectual disabilities, including but not limited to cerebral palsy, as well as Down syndrome, and ASD as well, autism spectrum disorder, as well as a number of physical disabilities, as I mentioned too.
So, how do you go about reaching out to potential players with disabilities?
So, my work has more so to do with working on the field. With regards to reaching out to potential athletes, as far as I'm aware, we try to advertise with local community groups, so we really try to reach out in that way. As well, we do work with Pickering Football Club. That's the organization we're under, so of course our programs are advertised through them as well, and yeah, that's basically what we do.
So, for the athletes themselves, do you use any modified equipment out on the field?
Yeah, so this is very important for us to have a very, I guess you could say, expansive variety of different pieces of equipment. We really try to make use of different colors. We try to make sure that, for example, if there's a certain drill that involves jumping over hurdles, we try to make sure that there's different heights, so it's not either too easy or too difficult for different athletes depending on their abilities. So we really try to make sure that there's hurdles for athletes to jump over that are high enough for certain athletes, and then for others, we want to be able to make sure that we can make them lower. Then at the same time, we also have different balls as well. So we have normal soccer balls, we have smaller soccer balls, we even have soccer balls that will make sound, like sort of when you shake them. So they're easier to locate for certain athletes. So it's very important for us to keep using a wide variety of different pieces of equipment so we can give the best experience possible for athletes.
So are there any challenges in tailoring a program to an athlete with a disability?
There are a wide variety of different challenges, and it really all depends on the athlete. There could be obstacles towards, you know, I guess you could say social obstacles with the athlete. Some athletes are very shy. It's very difficult for them to, you know, sort of open up to a volunteer. And, you know, really at the end of the day, it comes down to trusting the volunteer, right? Because not only are you giving them verbal instruction and at times asking them to do a certain drill or activity that the athlete might not even be comfortable doing, it might also involve some, I guess you could say, some physical instruction. So sometimes, like, when I'm saying that, you know, and I'm sure you can imagine in soccer, you need to use different parts of your foot iterative the ball, depending on which skill you're using. Sometimes, you know, that might involve also reaching down and touching the laces part of my athlete's shoe to sort of show him that he needs to use this part of his foot. So when we're sort of interacting with the athletes in this way, the first real barrier is getting past the social obstacle. And this just comes down to trying to be as friendly as we can with our athletes and showing them that, you know, we're here to have fun. We can do this by, you know, trying to be enthusiastic, by doing the drill in front of them and showing them how much fun it is. Really just trying to be encouraging and as enthusiastic as possible to sort of gain their trust. Then going from there, honestly, the possibilities are endless, really. There could be a physical disability that is, you know, preventing the athlete from performing the drill in the intended way. In that sort of situation, what we could do is we could modify the drill right then and there. So like I mentioned, if there's like, for example, like a hurdle that's too high to jump over, we could try to use something else. It might even just come down to, you know, like putting a skipping rope on the ground and asking them to hop over it to the best of their ability. So it could include modifying drills. And also to try to make things more inclusive, we could even try to have their friends or have other athletes, you know, try to perform the drill in front of them to try to create a more inclusive environment, try to show them that we're trying to invite them into a place where they're accepted and sort of a place where they'll have fun. So those are some examples of some obstacles we come across in our work.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with All Abilities Soccer, is there any success story that stands out for you?
In particular, I can think of some athletes that have been with us for some time who have, thankfully, over time, been able to progress from being a junior athlete to being a senior athlete, and to, up until the pandemic at least, having been able to actually volunteer with us. So I can definitely think of those athletes in mind as success stories. Obviously, there are lots of athletes. I mean, generally, our athletes do tend to benefit from our program immensely, and they do enjoy it, and there's lots of athletes who are with us for years on end. However, I can think of specifically some athletes who have even gotten to the point and to the point of proficiency, you could say, that they were able to start volunteering with our program and start helping out with our younger athletes as well.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Blood donors are needed now as much as ever. If you would like to help meet the needs of patients across Canada, please consider booking an appointment by calling 1-800-DONATE, visiting blood.ca, or through the Give Blood app. The Windsor Blood Donor Center is located at 3909 Grand Maris Road East. Please note that extra safety precautions have been taken during this time, and only healthy individuals with a scheduled appointment will be allowed to donate blood.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Ruth Fernandez from Extend a Family and from Adept soccer coach, Zane Jaffrey. In this segment of our show, our friend Josie Hart will be telling us a little bit about how she's dealt with the mental health situation accompanying COVID-19. So you were telling me a little bit about how people have turned to you for just some calming in their mental health state and the whole COVID situation. How have you been able to stand by them in this?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think every one of us kind of struggles with some sort of mental health issue or even some sort of issue. But yeah, I've had some people contact me just saying, you know, hey, like, this is what I'm going through. You know, how are you handling it, or how do you kind of handle it? And I've had to explain to them, you know, this pandemic that we are going through is so hard because it's kind of like one of those things that you can't really go about and just do what you need to do or want to do, and it's hard to get together with people. And I think, and I had this one girl come up to me and say, I don't know how to do it because I'm so used to being out in the community, and I'm so used to being, you know, like out there and being with the community and having that community support me. And she said to me, how do I do that when I can't be with people right now? So, and I kind of had to say to her, there are so many ways to even just have a conversation online with people, or like have conversations with people that you have seen, keeping in mind that you do need to keep your circles close. You do need to keep, you know, your distance and your boundaries, but there are many of different opportunities and apps that you can use to still see people and still talk to people. You just have to be very careful. And I mean, it's been very difficult not being able to be in the community and being out there and speaking with one another, but it's choosing those people that you can talk to, that if you feel the comfort of that, then that's what you need to kind of do.
So,
but as well as you kind of got to be careful, you know what I mean?
So, do you see people taking the appropriate precautions for the safety of those around them and all this?
Do I see that, or do I think that?
Yes.
You know what? I have to say, I don't think people are taking the right precautions at all. I don't think people... I think most people understand how serious this whole... like COVID thing is, but I think a lot of people are just like, oh, if I put a mask on my face, it's not going to harm me. Which, you know what, putting a mask on your face is going to keep you and keep other people safe. But if you're not wearing that mask and you're not taking that social distance as a precaution, that's not just saying like, oh, I'm going to put that mask on my face and then I'm going to go to a buddy's house and then what, you're going to take that mask off? That's not, you know, that like that's not taking that precaution, you know what I mean? And so I think a lot of people right now don't take that precaution very serious, and I don't see that happening a lot. Like, I don't see people taking those guidelines and saying, "Okay, I'm going to do this so I can keep myself and the people around me safe." It's more about what they want and how they want to be seen.
So, what techniques have you used to keep your own mental health in this whole situation?
Some of the techniques is I reach out to those around me that, you know, I know that are able, or not even just able, I keep those people in range that I have known over the years that I've been able to talk to. Talking to a counselor, I mean, I feel like a lot of people don't understand, and I think that a lot of people go, oh, I don't want to talk to a counselor because I don't know them, and I don't want to I don't want to share my feelings, but talking to a counselor is one of the biggest things that I suggest to people, to do, because right now, they're going to be one person that you can talk to that is going to be able to help you and going to be able to, you know, be that person that you can just talk to, and they aren't going to necessarily know you in a personal level. And they're not going to judge you, where you may have those people out there right now that may judge you because you're sad or because you've got whatever mental health stigma you have. You still, like, that is the biggest thing, is just, and keeping those people too, Cam, like people who you trust and love. Like, I totally, you know, I have my parents, I have my boyfriend, I have my aunts and uncles that I can talk to, and that is one thing that I am so happy about, that, you know, I can still talk to them, I just may not be able to see them.
So, if you could send any message to the community about keeping an open mind and not judging another's mental health and all this, what would you say?
You know, honestly, I think it would more just be like exactly what you said. Keep that open mind. Keep that like, keep that in the back of your mind that everyone struggles differently. Everyone struggles in their own different ways. And trying to say that one person struggles one way and another person struggles another way and that both of those struggles are not okay, you can't say that. You got to be open-minded and non-judgmental, because a lot of people who struggle with mental health, it's when it comes back down to being judged, that's what can affect them even worse. Like, it's not just about, oh, I'm going to talk to this person, but then they're going to judge me and they're going to say, oh, well, that's not, like, you can't be that bad. It's not that bad. When really, everyone struggles differently with everything. Everyone struggles differently with depression. Everyone struggles differently with anxiety. Everyone struggles differently with all these other mental health issues. And you can't just rely on what you see from one person to another.
So, too, their reactions, too, it'll be different. Their tolerance levels. I mean,
yeah.
One person can handle incredible amounts of stress and strain, whereas another person might need to seek help at a different point. You're right. Yeah. It all comes down to the individual's strength.
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, so, for example, you know, there could be one person who you could say, oh, it's not that bad, you'll get better, like, this, it's just gonna take time. That to that one person may be, like, to them, they may think, okay, well, maybe it just will take time. And to another person, they could have been struggling for so long, and now they're coming to ask for help, and you're like, oh, you're fine, or, oh, it's gonna take time, you'll get better. When they might have been struggling for so long before that they've even, that you don't know about.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, no problem.
Now, for anyone who remembers the very earliest days of this show, you might remember Josie had made an appearance on here once before. In that case, talking about an autism campaign. But these days, we're all being impacted by just the mental health concerns and wondering what's going to happen. And I think she's got the right idea in encouraging people to stick together and to stay strong. But the fact is, the worst thing we can do to ourselves in this situation is letting ourselves be beset by panic. I mean, day to day, things hang in the balance. If people take the proper precautions, take the time to learn what they should be doing, and to respect others' rights, we all stand a much better chance of coming through this. And honestly, it's hard to imagine right now the other side of this equation, what the world's going to look like when it gets back to normal. Will people remember the lessons they've learned? Will they be able to take the best of what's been made available to them? Just keep it in circulation and to help others. A world of opportunity has been opened for people with disabilities. In a lot of cases, being able to work from home is kind of the best thing that could have happened to them. So much as there are transportation issues, there are accessibility issues, and people want to contribute. This actually is opening the possibility of making it more practical for such a worker. It's not to say it's necessarily worth all the heartache and risk that's out there. The fact is, if we can take any positive aspect from this, we should allow ourselves to do so, and not to forget it when the world resumes. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.